So I want to add my welcome to Ignite. I'm Jason Zander. I run the Azure engineering team, headquartered in Redmond with a worldwide team. And our topic today is reinventing IT infrastructure for business agility. Now, that's a heck of a lot of words there, but basically what we want to talk about is really the work that everybody in here does. I mean, in fact, just by way of introduction, I've been at Microsoft for 24 years, and like a lot of the folks here in the audience, I've been a developer for a big period of that, but I also am doing worldwide operations systems. You can't hear me. Hello. Echo. Okay. So my friends in the back here, is it getting better? Testing 1, 2, 3. Is that better? All right. Thumbs up for the audio. All right. I'm sure that's the last demo technical glitch we're going to have. Yeah. All right. I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited. As I was saying, my job is running the Azure engineering team, okay? So part of my job is to make sure we're building out our worldwide cloud services that we have on the developer side, but it's also keeping our fleet up and running worldwide. It's 24/7, 365 or 366 this year. All of us have to do the same thing. I think many of us in this audience, of course, this is the job that we do, because honestly, the folks in this room, the vision that we saw in the keynotes, we're the ones that make these things happen. And frankly, when things go bump in the night and it's 2:30 in the morning, we're the ones that are right there making sure we get everything back up and running. And that's really super important. So I'm excited to have everybody here today as we go through the content. Now, as I look for the business, there's a lot of things we want to do to help the business. Businesses are looking for growth and agility, time to market and productivity. We all have to move faster. This is a very digital kind of economy that we have out there. And we're also seeing a lot of pressure. In fact, we're starting to see that some estimates say about 50% of IT spend as we go forward is actually being spent outside of IT. And that's kind of an interesting sort of environment for us to be in. So, you know, how should we think about that? And how do we make sure that we're a strategic part of growing the business as we go? We've got a lot of pressures that are kicking in, and I think you guys deal with a lot of this stuff every single day. We have existing platforms that we have, some of it starts to get stagnating, a little bit of old. In addition to that, we have increasing security attack spaces that are coming through, regulatory constraints, we need to move faster from developers, and we have a whole bunch of other challenges that come through, and that's what we're dealing with in our day-to-day life. And that is our sound guy running over here. So if you're still seeing an echo, I think they're debugging it in the back. So at least the folks down here, you can hear me, right? Okay, great. I'm going to yell louder then. I don't know if that's going to help or hurt. We want to make sure that IT is strategic to the business, okay? I think that one of the things we have to look at is this stuff is going to continue to evolve, but I think that we can take advantage of the tools and the technology and the things that we're building. We're going to be able to improve security, enable our developers to move faster. That's how we wind up becoming, you know, a very strategic part of the overall business. If you want to do that, I think there's three things that we want to concentrate on. There's three things that we can do in order to help with that. In particular, we want to extract more value out of the infrastructure that we have today. So we've already got deployed systems out there. We want to be able to figure out how do I optimize those systems and how do I add new capacity and capability to that. In addition, there are new application models that are coming through. It's changing the way that development tends to be done. And so we want to make sure that we're doing the additional work there to get those new models enabled and up and running. Finally, we have to be able to manage all this, because as we add more and more systems in here, we're going to wind up with more and more things to keep track of. And frankly, some of it will be on premises, some of it's going to be in the cloud, some of it's going to be in multiple clouds. And how do we deal with that? And that's the framing for the conversation that we're planning to have today, is to walk through these and show you some of the new features and functionality that's there, and some really cool demos along the way, and pretty much set you up for the rest of the Ignite sessions that you're going to be headed off to today. So let's go ahead and get started. And I want to start off, first of all, with the data center. And you know, the truth is, our expectation is that we're going to have a high percentage of people that are going to continue to run and have hybrid scenarios. In fact, IDC estimates that 80% of enterprises by 2017 will be deploying a hybrid strategy if you're not already. And so in our particular case, we think this is a first-class component to our strategy, and it has been since day one for the cloud. We're not expecting that all of a sudden you flip a switch and everything just shows up in the public cloud. In fact, we think there's actually very legitimate use cases that pretty much go on forever. We want to make sure we're doing a great job there. And part of that means enabling you with the tools and the software that are going to help you with that. So we're going to start off talking about Windows Server 2016 and System Center 2016, which are frankly jam-packed, you know, full of brand new functionality. In fact, it's the 20th year anniversary of Windows Server, which is pretty awesome. So it's great that we're, you know, at the launch today. We've done a really great job with trying to think through the end-to-end security inspired of this. It is Azure inspired. You're going to see how we've taken the learning that we've gotten from the public cloud, and we've made that available and pulled that in for Windows Server, so you can actually run and get those same sort of components for yourself. And then we've also designed things so that they're optimized for those new application patterns that come through. Now, I want to start off with one aspect of this, which is the security thing. And when I think about security, you know, sometimes you think it's often about, still can't hear me. Okay, back again. All right, thumbs up. We're going to keep canaries in the back. If you can keep, we'll keep going, we'll get everything settled here. All right, when you think about security, look, sometimes you start off with security, and where you're basically thinking is, hey, you know, it's ninjas dropping out of, you know, ductwork up on top, you know, Mission Impossible style. And clearly those things are interesting, but honestly, you have to start off right at the base and say, hey, we have unpatched systems. In fact, if you look at a lot of the headlines that show up when I have hacks, quite often it was because you had an unpatched system in the first place. So that's, you know, frankly, we've got to do the blocking and tackling components of this. We also have incremental encroachment that starts to show up. So people get into a system, they start going from left to right. We have to worry about internal and external, especially as I talk to the largest banks and governments. This is something they're super interested and worried about, is making sure they've got a good security profile. And yes, I do care about ninjas coming down out of the roof. If we have advanced persistent threats, well-funded systems that are basically, you know, hackers that really know what they're doing, they're sophisticated, they know what they're going after, industrial IP and things like that, we care about all these things. This is kind of a scary set of, you know, information here. If you think about this, after a hacker goes through and researches the hacks and they first compromise a host, it really can take usually about 24 to 48 hours before your domain admin has been compromised. That's really fast. And if you watch any of the hacker conferences, you can see people doing demos where they do it even faster. And the really scary thing is that on average, there's 150 plus days of time when that hacker is in your system, just dwelling and going through there, figuring out what's interesting, what's cool inside of the system, and what can I get out of it? And oftentimes it's going right for data. Data, of course, is the most interesting. And we see these headlines that pop every day. None of us wants to be one of those headlines, absolutely not. So that's a scary kind of thing. So the question is, how should we do that? Well, we start off, and this is kind of the Windows Server philosophy. It's how we actually built the latest version of Windows Server, and it's how we think about it. Of course, we want to start off with Protect. And Protect is what you expect. I want to put up walls around my system. I want to build moats. I want sharks with laser beams. You know, I mean, I want all those sort of things, basically keeping us safe and sound. But we also want to spend some time thinking about, hey, what would the best defense posture look like? How can I have a really great defense in depth with what I'm doing? And that means I have to have fast detection time. I got to be able to go in and figure out if somebody does get in, how did they get in? And I need to be able to know that they're there, not 150 plus days of them hanging around doing fun and interesting things. And if they should happen to get in and find some component of data, then the first thing I want to do is make sure that they can't really get anything interesting out of it. So even if they get a hold of it, we're going to be okay, or at least we know that that data is protected. And then finally, we want to be in a respond mode where we're patching and getting ourselves back up and running and making sure that we're, you know, nice and safe going forward. And then this feeds back into the cycle, because anything we learn, we're going to apply back and protect. And as we know, there's going to be continued increasing sophistication for the hacks that come through the system. Now, one of the things we introduced to help, and let's talk about this isolate concept, is shielded virtual machines. And this is with a new version of Windows Server. In particular, we've done encryption at rest and in transit. And that means that your data is actually encrypted. And so even if somebody got a hold of it, they can't do interesting things with it. Windows Server 2016 is actually set up with a trusted host. And that means there aren't even sideways, you know, ways to get into the system and go after that same type of data. We also want to make this easy to get set up, because we don't want you having to take a bunch of downtime or a bunch of complicated steps. In fact, we want to build this into the system so I get that protection right off the bat. So to get us kicked off today, we're going to jump into our first demo and take a look at this in action. I want to invite Jeff Woolsey up on stage. He's going to show us shielded virtual machines. Jeff.
How's everybody doing? Oh, a little bit better than that. How's everybody doing? Awesome. Well, thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, with virtual machines, we actually encapsulate the operating system, applications, and data. Makes it easy to move and live migrate virtual machines. Unfortunately, it also, this encapsulation also makes it easy for the bad guys to copy and steal virtual machines, take it somewhere else, and mine the VMs looking for important data, credit card numbers, usernames and passwords, or other secrets. In addition, the virtualization fabric itself is an attack vector. One of the things people don't realize is storage admins, network admins, compute admins, they all have access to everything inside virtual machines. Let me give you a perfect example. For the moment, let's pretend I'm a malicious SAN administrator. Now, I could be a bad guy who used a phishing attack to actually get the credentials, or I could actually be a rogue SAN administrator inside of an organization. Doesn't matter how, but I'm actually running as a full SAN administrator. Now, I know, of course, one of the best ways to attack you is to go after identity and go after your Active Directory. So, since I know you most likely have it virtualized because virtualization is ubiquitous, I'm going to go to the storage fabric to my SAN. I'm going to go to my virtual disk. I'm going to go to my virtual hard disk. And lo and behold, I have the keys to your kingdom, Active Directory DC1, Domain Controller 1. I am now going to perform an extremely complex attack. Watch very closely. It's called a double click. Now, what I've now done is I've mounted the virtual disk. And in fact, you can see I have the NTDS folder. And in fact, I have the NTDS.dit folder, which is the entire Active Directory database. I'm going to copy this, put this on my USB key. I'm going to take this home. And I'm going to spend the next few months brute force attacking it to try and get to its secrets. And eventually, it's going to look something like this. It's a key value pair list of usernames and passwords. Now, the point I want to make here is that, quite simply, every virtualization platform has this problem, period. Hyper-V, VMware, KVM, Xen, everybody, period. Wouldn't it be great if there was a way we could actually protect your virtual machines from fabric admins? Well, that's exactly what we're doing in Windows Server 2016 with shielded virtual machines. Shielded virtual machines actually create a black box that fabric admins can't penetrate, and it's under control of the VM owner, the guest OS. Let me show you. We're going to bring up System Center Virtual Machine Manager. I can see, oh, I shielded Domain Controller 2, but apparently we forgot to do that with Domain Controller 1. The way we do it is when we simply select it, click on Shield, and now we add the shielding data. Now, of course, this begs the question, what is shielding data? Shielding data is an encrypted lump of secrets created by the virtual machine owner. It securely delivers secrets to the fabric for which the shielded virtual machine will run. Those secrets include the administrator password, the list of fabrics for which the shielded virtual machines can run, an RDP certificate, and something called a volume signature catalog, which allows me to know that when I deploy a virtual machine, shielded virtual machine from a template, it actually has the integrity to know that it's actually the bits I sent it. Now, I'm going to go ahead and do this, but it's going to take a few minutes to convert this to the shielded VM or to a black box here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and attack this domain controller 2 that's already been shielded. In fact, I'm going to do the same exact attack we just did before. I'm going to go back to my SAN. I'm going to go into my virtual disks and... Oh, sorry, this is the VMDK folder. These guys don't have shielded virtual machines. We're going to go to the VHDs. We're going to double-click on Domain Controller 2, and you can see, sorry, I can't do that. This drive has been BitLocker protected. All right, let's go back here to go to Explorer. You can see there's the disk. I'm going to try and double-click on it here, and actually I get a slightly different error. It says there are no supported protectors on this drive. The drive cannot be unlocked. What it's saying is, I can't decrypt the key to decrypt the volume, so even though I'm running as full admin on this machine, full storage admin, sorry, you're out of luck. All right, let's try something different. Let's try a different attack vector. Let's go to Hyper-V. Now, we all know, of course, if you're running Hyper-V, that we're going to provide you a live thumbnail down below. And if I double-click on a live thumbnail, I'll get a console connection. Well, that's for a normal VM. What happens when I try to do that on Domain Controller 2 that's been shielded? You'll notice, nope, there's no thumbnail. And when I try to double-click to get a console connection, it says, nope, sorry, you can't do that either. You've got to use RDP. So think about what's going on here, and let me show you give you a number of facts here with shielded virtual machines. Shielded virtual machines each have a virtual TPM that securely seals the key that encrypts the virtual disks. On top of that, Each shielded virtual machine has a unique TPM, ensuring that each shielded virtual machine has a unique encryption key. On top of that, each shielded virtual machine runs as a protected process, which means you can't attach other processes like debuggers, which means we're actually protecting the memory of the virtual machine and it cannot be inspected. On top of that, of course, like you've just seen, there's no host integration, no console connect, no PowerShell direct, no file integration with the host at all whatsoever. In short, a shielded virtual machine is a black box to fabric administrators, whether you're storage, compute, networking, at rest, or in flight running. Quite simply, no one has this technology. This is how you do end-to-end virtualization security. Quite simply, with Windows Server 2016 shielded VMs, this is the only way you can protect your virtual machines from fabric administrators. Thank you very much.
Awesome, great, thanks, Jeff. So now you can see again part of that, how we go back and do the protection component of this. And so a great new feature that we've got coming out with Windows Server 2016. And if we can flip back over to the slides, let's keep going through the data center section that we have here. First of all, lots of cool stuff that's coming in Windows Server 2016. And I can tell you, I run Windows Server 2016. It's my host. Okay, I've got over a million servers running inside of the system. We'll deploy several million cores this month alone. And Windows Server is the base of that. And we've been using Windows Server 2016 actually for dogfooding and preview modes internally for well over a year. And we're rolling it out in production to the fleet as we speak. And frankly, that's something you're going to get from us at Microsoft. A lot of the other big cloud providers, they're not going to give you their version of their whatever OS environment, their hypervisor that they're running. They're not going to give you that content. We're actually shipping it to you with that built in. Now, in particular, let's take a look at compute. First of all, we've increased the limits. I got 24 terabytes max per host. That's 4x what we used to have, and that's 6x what you can get from VMware. We also have 12 terabytes per VM. That's 12x what you had before on the previous version, and it's 4x what I can get with VMware there as well. And it's also a fantastic environment for running Linux workloads. I can tell you that nearly 1 in 3 virtual machines running on public cloud Azure today is already Linux. And in fact, we're seeing about a 60% run rate on our new ARM template deployment and the new things in the marketplace that use Linux. About 60% of VMs that are coming out now are actually going to be Linux virtual machines. So it's an awesome environment for running on that. Now, from the networking side, this is Azure networking in some ways. We've actually taken the software that we've built for software-defined networking, and we've actually made it available as part of this version of Windows Server. In particular, software load balancing is a great example that we've built in. We've already tested it, battle-hardened it across the public cloud, and now we've rolled it right into the operating system. In fact, we've had partners that have gone from taking 2 weeks to set up a networking topology down to about 8 minutes. Because it's built right into the system, and we do a lot of the hard parts. So that really saves you a lot of money, it saves you a lot of time, and really gives you that kind of agility that you need to get going quick. On the storage space, what we've done is a lot of new work here. First, we've done sync replication. That's in the box. That basically means you save money. It's just part of the operating system going forward. We've also done storage spaces direct. And in this particular case, we've had competitors out there that just announced industry-leading benchmarks of around 1 million IOPS that are out there. And we kind of think with our latest version, that's a great start, but it's not actually where you need to run up to. That's just a little bit of teaser. Mike Neal's going to go into a lot of additional detail across this, but let's just say that there's a lot of new multipliers that you need to add to that. So Mike Neal's session is going to go in deeper to all of these things and drill down to the next level, give you any additional details on what you can accomplish with this. Now, as we start moving forward, then the next question is, how do I do the management side? And we also have a new version of System Center 2016, and it is really the first choice for managing Windows Server. Great new support inside of it, obviously, for Windows Server. Rolling cluster upgrades is a great one. Shielded VMs at scale, you just saw the demo from Jeff, but how do I do that across my data center and at massive scale? And that's what we have System Center for. In addition, it's got lifecycle management built in for Nano. That's our new minimal footprint deployment that we have for Windows Server. Great new content for that as well. We've also done some additional work on performance and the usability side. So I'm curious, does anybody have a problem getting just like a ton of alerts coming out of System Center? A lot? Just me? Okay, great. All right, see a few hands out there. One of the things we did was work on the usability for that. We've added advanced filtering into the system. That means you can go in and tune from the groups and what you get through. So you can kind of separate through what's super important for you and the things you want to take action on. And we put in new availability things like that in addition to a number of other improvements for the product. So we think it's a great combination of Windows Server 2016 and System Center 2016 for managing that type of environment. Now, I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about the new application platforms that are coming out. And let's start talking, first of all, about Nano. And Nano was something many of you asked for, which is, I would like to have an optimized version of server that really is a low overhead. It's kind of designed, really, for running the data center in those hosts. In particular, Nano does not have the GUI. You actually use remote management. I can use the CLI in those components. And that removes surface area from it, makes it smaller, and it's also less patching, you know, surface area you need to worry about. Okay, take a look at the stats that we have here. In particular, I can actually get my setup time down to nearly 1/10 of what it is with server core, which is already a subset. My boot time's only 9 seconds, and that one is really, really important as I start spinning up new application workloads. They want to do a lot of dynamic scaling along the way. And our disk size is actually pretty negligible, actually, and that means from a host overhead perspective, doesn't take up a lot of room. The same thing goes as I start embedding from the guest side. Now, we're starting off on workload-wise with Nano with compute and storage clusters. In particular, so now I get the host environment that's there. I got that minimal kind of footprint. But we're also going to support the web and apps, basically as a container kernel host. And that basically means I can start building these new workloads and containerized workloads with this version of Windows Server. So we're really excited about Nano as part of the new release that we have here. So speaking of containers, this is something that our dev teams are actually spending a lot of time now looking at on how to build new modern workloads in the system. So in particular, container technology, that's changing the way a lot of these apps basically come together. In particular, you know, I love it as a developer because I can take my dependencies and I can get them packaged nice and close. I don't have to worry about things dangling. I get less of this drift between what I have on my dev machine. It works on my machine, but it doesn't work in the data center. Those are things that actually help. It also gives the opportunity to work on things like density as I go back and do deployment. Now, if I build my containerized application, then the next thing that has to happen is I've got to be able to deploy it. And in this case, we've got, you know, deep support that you can use on top of the system for container orchestration. And so these are runtimes that, as a dev, I don't really want to care. I don't want to memorize server names. I don't want to memorize IP addresses or things like that. I have an application, and it's meant to work on my machine. It's meant to work in tests. It's meant to work in production. And I want those things kind of abstracted away. And container orchestration really helps me out with that. Then ultimately, we will land it on some kind of container host, and we have a lot of solutions for that. So that's the environment that we are trying to set up. Now, if we come back to Windows Server and what we're doing here, two things that ship inside of the product. The first one is Windows Server containers, and that gives me the ability to have that high density. I can have that kind of shared kernel mode, so I get that really fast startup time. In fact, Nano is a perfect choice for running some of this, but I can, you know, pick whichever ones make sense. But we've also given you something unique to Windows, and that's Hyper-V containers. So whereas regular containers can have a shared kernel, if you're doing multi-hosted tenanting where I've got multiple customers, they really shouldn't be doing that. That's, you know, potentially a security risk. And so Hyper-V containers allow me to take that same container technology, but I can deploy them with the isolation of a VM that comes with that. And we actually use this type of technology for things like Azure Machine Learning and Azure Automation, where once again, we're executing lots of jobs for multiple tenants, but we want that security, we want that isolation. It's exactly the same kind of technology that we use under those cases. Now, if you think about containers, there's one company that has really done just an awesome job, and in some ways they're kind of almost synonymous with the technology, and that's Docker. And Docker has done a fantastic job building out some of the automation, the developer support, as well as the runtimes that really make containers something that's quite practical to do in production. And the work that we're doing and that Scott talked about earlier today, it's really about making sure that you can confidently use Windows Server containers in production and use a system like Docker, which is pretty amazing. As Scott mentioned before, with this new announcement and this extension of the partnership, we've got commercially supported Docker Engine at no additional charge for you, which I think is going to be pretty awesome. And you're also getting support from Microsoft and from Docker. You can just call up Microsoft like you always do if you ever have any issues and you're trying to figure out what's going on. And between the two of us, we will make sure that you're fully supported with this system. Now, in order to learn more about this, what I'd like to do is invite Ben Gollum. He's the CEO of Docker. He's up here with us. I'd like to have Ben come on stage, and let's talk a little bit more about Docker. So, Ben.
Hey. Good to see you.
Good morning, Ben. And we've actually had an awesome collaboration between our two teams, actually for the last couple of years. So I'm super excited for us to be able to extend this as we got new operating systems and environments and with our IT professionals that we have here. Why don't we start off, and especially for folks that aren't necessarily too familiar with containers or even Docker, can you tell us a little bit more about Docker?
Sure. Well, Docker is the company behind the Docker project, which at this point is being used by millions of developers and running on millions of servers worldwide. And the reason really ties into what Scott was talking about earlier, which is consistency. When you put an application or service inside a Docker container, it's almost the equivalent of putting something physical inside a shipping container. You know, no matter what's on the inside of a physical shipping container, it's always the same size, hooks and holes in the same places. And in our world, basically any application or service inside a Docker container will run consistently on the developer's laptop, in testing, staging, in production. It'll run consistently if you move from a virtualized environment to a physical environment. It'll run consistently if you move from on-premises to a cloud like Azure. And starting today, of course, it'll also run consistently whether you're dealing with Linux applications or Windows applications or hybrid.
That's fantastic. And so there's huge developer, you know, productivity wins, and also on the IT side, you know, I get the higher level of quality. So with the deal that we've announced today, so we put this in, can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, how you think of that and how folks can take advantage of that?
So really this deal is all about making it possible for people to take all of the great productivity gains which are possible with Docker and Windows Server and all of the great security and operational gains you can get and make it really easy to deploy in a secure and sustainable way within the environment. So as you mentioned, Docker's commercial engine commercial support are made standard as part of every version of Windows Server 16 which is being shipped. We've also collaborated on Docker's management tool. So Docker offers a management tool which is also being used now by thousands of large and small organizations alike that makes it possible to take this notion of container and apply it to the software supply chain so that you're able to manage the entire process from developers building code to it being tested, it being scanned, put into production, upgraded, moving from one host to another, et cetera. And we've collaborated on that as well, and you can try it in Azure, you can try it on-prem, it doesn't matter.
That's awesome. That's Docker Data Center.
That's Docker Data Center.
It's the new technology. Right. And you've actually got a lot of big companies out there already using Docker today in production, mm-hmm. correct?
That's correct. I mean, so we're seeing Docker being used in production by large banks. We're seeing it being used by defense industry, by manufacturers. And even with the preliminary work that we were doing with Windows Server, we started to see great customers like Tyco, who spoke earlier.
Yep. We saw the demo from before. Yeah.
Absolutely. And what we're sort of seeing as a typical use case for some of our larger customers is that they actually don't start with their new cool microservices applications. They start with their legacy applications. And just by Dockerizing a legacy application, you get portability, you get the ability to build up muscle memory around things like continuous integration and continuous delivery. And perhaps most importantly, you get success in a couple of days or a couple of weeks, which builds up organizational confidence and organizational advocates to really take this to the next level.
That's awesome, so I can get started. So if I think of the folks that are here, so if they want to get started, it sounds like from a principal perspective, start off small. Any recommendations for people if they want to get going?
Well, you definitely said the right thing. From a principal perspective, you start small, pick a single application, whether it's new or legacy, and get started. Docker's disruptive technology, but adopting it doesn't have to be. But then in terms of tool tips and techniques, what's coming out of the box with Windows Server 16 is everything that you're going to need to run the applications that your developers are probably already writing using Docker or packaging using Docker. If you want to learn more about that, take what comes out of the box, come by the Docker booth. We've got use cases and seminars, et cetera. And if you want to try out Docker Data Center, which is our management tools, best way to do that is we've got a free trial running on Azure. And just to give you a sense of how easy that is to use, last night at about 30,000 feet over Kansas, our head of sales was able to deploy Docker Data Center on Azure, high availability using airline Wi-Fi. So, you know, if you can do that, I think you can do anything.
That's pretty awesome, because I couldn't even get connected on airline Wi-Fi, so I think you're way ahead of all the rest of us. So.
Well, the trick to do it is do it late at night.
Do it late at night. Okay, awesome. Well, Ben, I really appreciate the partnership that we've got. I'm really excited about being able to bring Docker to the folks we have here in the room, so thank you very much.
Okay, and thank you. We're thrilled about the partnership.
Great. Thank you. So now I want to move on into our next section, and let's talk about the cloud and the new innovations that we're bringing forward with the cloud that we have here. So a few different things that are rooted on here, and Scott outlined the top level. We're going to go a little deeper. So global, trusted, and hybrid. And that really are the three pillars and tenets. And this has basically been a very consistent part of our strategy, actually, since we've started doing Azure and a lot of the work we've done with Windows Server, et cetera. I want to start off talking about global. And Scott mentioned this morning that we've got 34 regions, including most recently the Germany data center, which went to GA. We had the UK just a couple of weeks ago. And we brought India online last November. And those are just the ones that we've talked about so far. That's about twice the footprint that we've got compared to something like AWS. And we've already spent $15 billion. And we are spending a lot more. And it continues to increase as we build up our volumes. And we're super excited about that. In this space, we often talk about hyperscale. And that's things like talking about millions of cores being deployed on a regular basis, a gigawatt or more of power in that kind of environment. Now, we've also put through a lot of extra sizing thing. And you saw a preview that was there. One of those white buildings on the back, and this is Amsterdam, is actually the same size as a football field, okay, or a football pitch if you're from Europe, about the same kind of size. And that's not finished. And frankly, this isn't even one of our biggest data centers that come through. So the video Scott showed, great example of that. And a lot of that scaling technology, again, how do we make this work? We put a lot of that into the software that we've used as well. Now, we've got about 1.6 million miles of fiber that we've got set up around the world, and even new projects that we announced, like a partnership with Facebook for a mid-Atlantic new fiber link that we're doing as well, and we'll continue to add more. In addition to that, we have ExpressRoute, and that's about 20 of our private connection locations, and it allows you to connect your data center to our data center in a secure kind of way. We throw on top of that another 90 POPs that allow us to get even further reach out there, and then frankly, we've also partnered closely with a lot of the folks that you're probably already using as part of your own networking solutions, and this allows us to get that great connectivity, and that really enables the hybrid environments for us to run. Now, on top of that global infrastructure, then we come back and we actually start looking at the services that we put in place. And this is just a subset of the services that we make available for public cloud. It's a very broad platform, starting off with the infrastructure layer up through PaaS and then support directly for SaaS applications that we have. And we use all this same technology ourselves to go host all of the applications that we build ourselves. And because we're cloud delivered and we've set things up in an agile way, we're actually doing a lot of momentum. In fact, we've shipped over 600 new services and features in the last 12 months. And so you start to see even more innovation coming out, which is really cool. It's a very competitive space that we have today, and we really need to make sure that we're keeping up as we keep going. So we've got a lot of new stuff to announce. I mentioned we had some stuff that we're going to announce here in this room. So we're going to spend the next hour going through each and every one of these boxes and 12 bullet points each. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to go do that. There's way too many. It's like 600 features. We don't possibly have time. But I want to go pull out a few things and give us an opportunity to look deeper at what we've got here at Ignite. And there are detailed sessions on all of this content so you can see it. I want to start off, first of all, with the compute sizes that we have built in. And we have great flexibility from our A-Series, which allows me to spin up lots of VMs. And I can use those especially for large kind of big batch job kind of scenarios. Our general purpose D-Series, which gives us little SSD. We've also introduced more recently the F-Series. That's more compute-oriented. This is a case where I want more CPU and less memory and less disk. And it's actually very interesting for scenarios like gaming, where maybe I'm computing a virtual world, but it's not so much about the data side of that. For the data side, then we have the G-Series. That's for a lot of large memory. So if I have data-optimized workloads, they want a lot of cache, they want to be able to do a lot of kind of transaction-intensive work, G-Series is an obvious one for that. And you combine that with premium storage, that gives me a lot of IOPS, and now I can get a really great balance between these. And these are the existing systems that we've had out there today. I actually want to announce three new things that we've got. First, the new H-Series that's coming out right now. We have a new high-performance version for the H-Series. In particular, we have fast CPUs. They're the fastest ones in the public cloud. We have Intel Haswell E5 processors running on top of that. We're looking at ultra-fast, low-latency networking. We're using RDMA over InfiniBand. Super important if you're running HPC workloads. I got to be able to get that data interconnect working really, really well. And this is going to be really good for workloads like fluid dynamics and crash testing and genomics and those sort of things. So if you've got HPC workloads, definitely check out the H-Series. It's a really awesome set of virtual machine types to be able to go after. L-Series is also new. This is something else we've got coming out. This is based on the Intel Xeon E5 processor. And here we're going to support 8 gigabytes of RAM and 768 gigabytes to about 6 terabytes worth of SSD, depending upon how you configure. Now, this one is designed specifically for low latency, storage-optimized workloads. So if you're thinking things like, you know, NoSQL databases and those sort of components, those workloads love this kind of a system. And we designed this one to really be custom-built for that one to go work. And finally, we announced our N-Series, and we're now in preview with N-Series. N-Series is a great partnership we've had with NVIDIA. We're shipping M60s and K80s GPUs inside of these boxes, and we've got integrated grid support. So again, this one's super really important when I'm trying to do very, very fast workloads with GPUs. Really, you know, our target and sweet spot for this has been remote visualization, compute-intensive scenarios, so basically simulation, visualization, those sort of components as well. But then also, it's turning out to be very, very good for deep learning, artificial intelligence, predictive analytics, I mean, all the sort of workloads you've got. In fact, you'll hear more at the conference around some of the wins that we have with that. The K80s in particular are proven to be awesome for machine learning workloads. And these are things that we build up. And of course, we make them available to you for virtual machines. You can run them with open source packages if you want. And then, of course, we've turned around and built finished services like Azure Machine Learning and those sort of components on top of them, which gives us an awesome combination. Now, we've got a lot of customers that are using all of this technology that we've made available, and you can see some of these international brands that are out there. They're using various sort of flavors of this to run their business, and tons of projects and new projects coming along. In fact, you saw a couple of these actually discuss this morning's keynote. I want to pull one of these out, and let's go a little deeper on that, and that's Esri with their Teradici product. And this is a case where the advanced GPUs and the N-Series is really custom built for exactly that kind of tooling and that kind of workload that we've got. So I want to take a look at N-Series in action along with our partner Esri. And so I want to introduce John Meza. He's the performance engineering team lead for Teradici, and he's going to come out and give us a demo of that in action. So, John.
Thanks, Jason. So as you heard, I'm John Meza from Esri, the performance engineering team lead. At Esri, we are the world leader in geographic information systems, commonly called GIS. Our software supports spatial data visualization and analysis. The ArcGIS platform is the most powerful mapping solution in the world. It helps organizations of all sizes gain deeper insight into their geospatial data. With ArcGIS, Collin County, Texas, was able to use 2D and 3D maps to support their recovery efforts in the wake of last year's tornado that damaged 1,000 homes and claimed 11 lives. Our newest desktop product is ArcGIS Pro. ArcGIS Pro provides spatial data visualization, analysis, and editing for both 2D and 3D data in one package. ArcGIS Pro users see a great user experience. That's because our rendering engine leverages both DirectX and OpenGL graphics libraries, both of which fully utilize a GPU. Our users are very excited about cloud-based workstation solutions. To move towards meeting that need, we are moving to provide our online classes, large-scale MOOCs, software trials, and new software offerings from the cloud. On physical workstations and on-premise virtualization, our users see a great user experience. From cloud-based platforms, that has been more challenging, but is now possible with the Azure N-Series VM. Azure, together with Teradici and NVIDIA, provide an exciting solution for the delivery of high-end graphics-rich applications. Teradici's PC over IP technology really makes this possible. So now, let's go over and look at ArcGIS Pro, and it's showing the Atlanta airport. This is a VM that is This is an Azure N-Series VM, and it's from the Azure Texas Data Center. What you're seeing now is possible because this VM has Teradici's cloud access software and is powered by an NVIDIA M60 grid card. At the Atlanta airport, operational efficiency, customer service, and safety are top priorities for the operations teams. So here you see many airport buildings and surfaces being rendered. ArcGIS Pro is designed to deliver a rich end-user experience because we are using the GPU. But GIS is not only visualization. The power of GIS is in spatial analysis, and ArcGIS Pro delivers an incredible amount of GIS functionality. So let's go to the end of the runway. A good example of 3D spatial analysis is to look for potential airport runways, such as the height of trees. I'm going to show you a layer here, represented by a blue surface. This blue surface identifies the maximum height for obstructions. As you can see, there are some trees that are penetrating that blue surface. We need some more information. So we want to see the portion of the tree trunks that are above the blue surface. We need more information. So what we're going to see is the canopies for those trees. Now we're going to zoom out. I'm going to show you the entire airport again. That's a little taste of the power of ArcGIS Pro as delivered by an Azure N-Series VM.
All right, so we've got all those new compute systems coming out. If we switch back over to the slides, let's take a look at those. In particular, that's one partner that we're working with, but we've also spent a lot of time with SAP. And some of you I know are evaluating HANA as a potential data platform. And one of the things we announced earlier is our collaboration on purpose-built infrastructure for SAP HANA for Azure. And I'm happy to announce today that we're going to general availability for this solution. Now, this gives you the largest hyperscale cloud support for SAP HANA that's out there. That means we can go up to 32 terabytes on OLAP, and we can also go up to 3 terabytes on OLTP for scale-up workloads. And I can tell you the way in which we've built the solution, it will allow us to continue to add even more scale and be able to get to larger and larger systems over time. And we'll work with SAP to produce certifications as you decide that you've got need, you know, for those kind of systems as well. So we're very excited about that new technology coming out. And as you can see, we've now managed to double the number of compute offerings that we've got in 2016 from where we were. And we're going to continue to add additional ones, especially as there's new workloads that you'd like to optimize for. So thank you for the feedback that we've gotten so far from you. Now, we've got some additional great functionality inside of the system, and I want to talk a little bit about just a couple of these. In particular, for our networking systems, we're actually deploying FPGA cards as part of our fleet, and that's actually allowing us to do network acceleration, and we've got up to 25 megabits per second, which is unparalleled in the public cloud today. We're also introducing IPv6 technology that's going to make it possible for you to do IPv6 between virtual machines that you have inside of Azure. So lots of other new functionality here from the networking side coming through, and lots of systems able to explain that in the sessions later today. Now, Scott also mentioned this morning that we have a great system for running open source, and we have great Linux support as well. And there's a few new things that we'd like to actually talk about. In particular, we have Red Hat Enterprise Linux for SAP applications. So if you're already running in that kind of config, then we've got that set up and ready to go for you. We've also just recently, just a couple of weeks ago, added support for RHEL for Azure Government. So if any of you are working with state and federal and other sort of law enforcement or any other kind of environment, which you're using Azure Government, and you're also also using RHEL, then we've got you covered now. You're going to be able to use the systems there. And then finally, we also have introduced our microservices framework, which is Service Fabric, and we introduced that one earlier this year with Windows and .NET support. We now also have a preview ready to go for Linux and Java. And so you can have a Linux and a Java runtime and running that and build microservices architectures on top of that as well. So we're excited about the new technology that's coming through. Now, if we move on and talk a little bit about trusted, and that's a core thing. The security work that we talked about before is a big part of this. We also want to spend some time talking about our Azure compliance work that we've done. And this is super important. We've got 47 major certifications and attestations today, and that's 25% more than what AWS has. It's the largest compliance portfolio in the hyperscale cloud. And the other thing you need to really pay attention to is don't just look for logos on vendor site, but actually go in and see what's supported. For example, our PCI support that we have applies to 50% more services than what AWS has today. And if you look at our government support for Azure FedRAMP, we've got 300% more services available under our FedRAMP certification than what Azure or AWS has in comparison to that. So that's super important. If you're going to be looking at your workloads, just really go in there and make sure that all the functionality you want to take advantage of is actually supported. And we continue to add more as we go. In fact, we've added three more that I want to announce here today. First, ISO 22301:2012, in addition to the Privacy Shield framework, the EU-US Privacy Shield, we're actually the first public cloud to get this new certification about dealing with data between the US and the European Union. And then also with our Germany data center going live with the data trustee model last week, we've also added the Germany IT Grundschutz workbook. So we've got you covered there. So there are more coming, whether you're in a particular region around the world or you're working in a particular sector like healthcare or government or take your pick, we're going to continue to add more support for you. Let's move on and talk about hybrid. And like I mentioned up front, hybrid is actually a first-class part of our strategy, and it has been since day one. In particular, we do actually want to have product truth. And sometimes when I see other cloud vendors and they put the word hybrid on top of a slide, it usually means, well, here's a fiber connection. Let me hoover all your stuff out and shove it in my cloud, because frankly, that's how their business model works. We've actually tried to build product truth into the system itself. And that means that the software is actually built to honor and understand hybrid in the first place. I think SQL Server 2016 Stretch database, that's actually a perfect one. Having tables that can automatically span private and public cloud, and I don't have to change my queries, I don't have to change anything else, it just works. Great example. Integrated identity with AD and AAD, great combinations as well. Now, one that I want to pull out and talk about is hybrid platforms, and I want to talk about Azure Stack for that. And as Scott mentioned earlier today, Azure Stack, we're really happy to announce today the availability for Microsoft Azure Stack Technical Preview 2, or TP2, which is a little bit easier to say. We've gotten a lot of great feedback from TP2 is available. You can run it as a one box, and that means you get to have access to be able to test the system and take a look at the technical preview that's there. Now, Azure Stack is basically our version of Azure that you can run on premises or with the service provider. And that really means you can take that very cloud consistent environment, the app model, the management model, those sort of things, and make them go. Now, I actually think that, you know, data sovereignty comes up a lot, and that's actually an interesting one. But there's even more scenarios that we find interesting. Industrial is a great one. If I wanted to run a factory floor with a private cloud, I can't afford for a backhoe going through some kind of an Ethernet link to take my factory down. I'm going to lose like $15,000 a second in that kind of environment. So that's a great place to be able to have, you know, that cloud in tow. There's also specialized environments where I might be isolated for periods of time, maybe not permanently. I might have a boat going across the ocean. I might have boats going under the ocean. I mean, all of those are interesting scenarios where I actually want to have that cloud functionality available to me. I think smart cities is another great example of places where we're going through. I had critical infrastructure, again, where it's really imperative that it keeps running no matter what, and I have to have that support. Now, what we found with private cloud is oftentimes when I talk to people that have tried doing a private cloud project, one of their first hurdles is software, and then they have a hurdle with hardware. So we've really realized that the best way to do this is really to do a lot of great integration and bring you that kind of strength together. I'm actually super excited that we've got great partners that we're working with Lenovo, Hewlett Packard Enterprise, and Dell EMC. We've done a really great job with those folks. We appreciate the hard work that they've done. And in fact, you probably noticed that we've got our devices thing back here. Some companies have one more thing. We're in IT. I've got three big things right here. So let's take a look. We've got our Dell EMC component that we have here. We've got our HPE cluster that we have here, Azure Stack appliances, as well as the Lenovo machine. Now, I don't know about you guys, but the fronts are kind of cool, but in IT, especially if you're in the data center, the party's in the back. So let's take a look. And I kind of don't get too excited until I can find the Tor. So let's open the hood here and put that up on stage. If we can get the camera put up there so we can see what we're seeing here. So what you're seeing here is one of our Azure Stack appliances with integrated hardware and software. And the cool thing about this is because we've integrated these things very closely, what it means is that when I deploy one of these into my data center, I can basically energize it, hook it up to networking, and I'm good to go. The software's already there. I can start defining what kind of plans that I want, what do I want my dev teams to use, get those defined. And then from a dev perspective, the portal and the dev tools I use are the same ones I use in public cloud Azure, which basically means we have this really nice kind of combination. And we've also learned from your feedback, you know, on our hybrid projects that we want to make sure we have flexible formats. So we're also collaborating so we can have things as small as a quarter rack to get going, or I can have even bigger versions of these and combine them together so I can get additional support. So if you think about this, and thanks, Brian, for showing us all the content there. If you think about what we've got here, that really means you get a tremendous amount of flexibility on the sizes, the capabilities. And again, I really want to thank our partners for this work. Now, these machines here, they're going to go over into the expo hall, so feel free to stop by and do stop by the Microsoft booth so you can check these out, as well as our partners. They've got these things set up there. So if you want to have an even better look and figure out what we've got going on here, more questions on the hardware and the software integration, please come over and we'll show it to you and cover all that. Now let's make this concrete. So I want to go through a concrete Azure Stack workload demo here. And we're going to start off with the assumption that we're going to do a scenario where we're doing dev tests in the cloud, but I want to deploy to production on premises. And I expect my company to actually be quite successful. So the next thing we're going to do is we're going to look for expansion worldwide. So let's take a look at how Azure and Azure Stack help us enable that. I'm going to invite Bradley Bartz on stage. Give us a demo. Bradley.
Now, Azure Stack is an extension of our hybrid cloud platform. Just look at these Azure Stack integrated systems from Dell EMC, HPE, and Lenovo that are bringing Azure into your data centers. And with Azure Stack is coming new opportunities for collaboration between dev and ops. So today, we're going to look at just one way that collaboration can move forward. You're going to have to follow me on this scenario. Okay, we have a company based here in Atlanta with an on-premise data center. And in that data center, they're deploying their mission-critical applications into production behind the corporate firewall. But now they're modernizing those applications. They're moving them to containers for a more rapid, agile development model. Now to do this, the dev team is actually going to do their dev test up in Azure. So they go to Azure, do their dev test, get all the apps containerized. But then they're going to do their production deployment on premises. Okay, that's the scenario we're going to look at. Okay, so let's see how that would go ahead and get started. So now I'm going to log in, and as a developer, I'm going to get started in this process. I can go into the Azure portal. So here I am, a developer, logged into the Azure portal. I can go ahead and look for the VM that I need. In this case, I'm looking for the VM with Windows Server 2016 with containers. That's the container host that I'm going to use for my containerized applications. You'll notice here it is, and I can go ahead and start that deployment. But we're looking for opportunities to collaborate with ops. Now, the ops team is using Operations Management Suite to manage all corporate resources across the hybrid cloud, whether they're running up in the Azure public cloud or whether they're running on premises. So instead of using the default configuration that's coming from the marketplace, the ops team has defined a set of configuration parameters that dev teams should be using whenever they deploy a corporate resource. So now I'm going to switch and show you what that looks like for the developer. So here I am in Visual Studio. So I'm going to zoom in for just a second here. And when I zoom in, I want you to notice a couple of things. Here we have a workspace ID and key that was provisioned or specified by the ops team. What is a workspace ID? This is the workspace in OMS, in the Operations Management Suite, that allows OMS to aggregate the VMs together that are running up in the public cloud, as well as the VMs that are over here running on-premise into one workspace for a holistic management experience. Okay? So that's defined by default in the template that dev use. They've also defined the administrative password and Key Vault location for that password. Key Vault? What's that all about? It's a way to securely store your credentials in the cloud environment. Let's face it, the time is long past when we should be hard coding passwords in plain text in our automation and in our templates. This allows the dev team to use the IT-managed Vault for Security Identities. So in this case, they can deploy with those credentials, go ahead and get their dev test environment up and going in the public cloud. Now, let's go ahead and take a look at one of the VMs I deployed earlier with this template. So now I'm going to go into the Azure public portal. Remember, I'm still in Azure public cloud. Okay, now I'm going to look at this dev test environment that I have deployed. Now remember, this was deployed with the operation-defined parameters to put it under management from the moment it's deployed in the cloud. So when I look at extensions, what I should be seeing is the OMS agent that was injected in this VM during the provisioning process that ensures that it's under management. You'll notice that that agent is there, and it's ready, provisioned, and under management. This allows the dev team to not worry about the ops for the container host. The ops team will take care of servicing the container host. The dev team can go ahead and focus on containerizing their applications and not the host management. Believe me, they'll be glad to offload that responsibility. All right, so what happens when it's time? The dev team's already got that containerized app up and going, it's running good. They say, hey, we're ready to go in production. Now remember, production isn't up in Azure. Production's over here on premises. So now I'm gonna switch gears and I'm gonna log in as the operator of Azure Stack. Now as an operator, I'm an operator right now in this box. And this integrated system, this is the dashboard. I am now operating the cloud infrastructure powering Azure Stack. And as an operator, I have complete control. And one of the things I'm responsible for is to make sure that in this environment, I provide all the images that are necessary for my company to deploy their applications. So one of the things that's new that we've added in TP2 is the ability to go ahead and add new images directly from the administrative portal. So here you're going to see, as an operator, I can go in and I can say add a VM image. Now here I can add all the custom images that I'm going to create for my company, and I can go ahead and add a Windows image, or I could go ahead and add one of the Linux open source distributions. Now this is a great way to get started building up my catalog of images that I'm going to make available to my customers inside the company. You know what though? That Azure Marketplace up in Azure has an awful lot of images already sitting there. Wouldn't it be nice if I could go get some of those images and put them over here in my environment? I'm now going to give you a sneak peek at a new feature that we're building in Azure. That new feature is going to syndicate the Azure Marketplace images to make those available for distribution by Azure Stack operators into Azure Stack. So here's a new way to add images. I can say add from Azure. And when I say add from Azure, I'm going to get a curated list of images that are certified for deployment in Azure Stack. I want you to pause for just a moment and look at this. One, that's a list of images that I can deploy, so now I get a larger catalog to draw from of already certified and validated images. But think about it, what it means to our partner ecosystem. Now our partners that are publishing images and applications into the Azure Marketplace will be able to take those for distribution to Azure Stack to make those available. So we can grow our ecosystem for the Azure platform, for our hybrid cloud platform, as well as increasing the inventory that you have available to make available to your customers. Now, in our scenario, our dev test is using that Windows Server 2016 image with containers. One of the images that is available for syndication and distribution is the Windows Server 2016 image with containers. With that image selected as an operator, I could now go ahead and collect it and start to download and deploy that into my local Azure Stack environment and make it available to my developers. Once it's available, guess what? They can use that exact same template they were using for dev test, ensuring that it's under the same OMS workspace. Matter of fact, I'm going to switch gears right now. I'm going to go back to the developer scenario. So here I am. I'm going to pull up Visual Studio that we were just looking at a second ago. Now, as a developer, when I go to deploy that image, now because Visual Studio is also hybrid cloud aware, that means that as a developer, not only do I see my resources running up in the public cloud, but I'm going to have access to all the resources and subscriptions that I have running in the Azure Stack environment running on-premise. So here, look what happens when I drop this drop-down. Here, the developer is seeing their subscriptions in the public cloud and the subscriptions running in the Azure Stack environment. Now, why does the developer need to get access to this environment? One of the things we want to do in this scenario is allow the developer to validate that they did the test and validated it in the public cloud. We want to validate that it's ready for production deployment on-premise when they move it here. So this is a staging environment running on-premise. The developer can go ahead and deploy into that staging environment to ensure the application works as expected before ops team goes ahead and rolls it out into production. At every point in this process, we're using the exact same template with the same configuration options to ensure we're deploying and testing the same thing across all these environments. Now, agility is not just about developer productivity. It's also about a company's ability to bring their solutions into new markets as opportunities present. So we're going to expand our scenario just a little bit here. In this case, our business is growing up into EMEA and over into Asia. In this case, our company is going to partner with a service provider running the Azure Stack integrated system from HPE and the integrated system from Lenovo in Asia. So we have EMEA and Asia now over here, two more Azure Stack environments running that are also helping my company meet my compliance and data sovereignty requirements so I can deliver my solution to those customers in those geographies. So now I'm going to go ahead and log into the other machines. So now here I'm logged in as a developer. And just like we did when we went from dev test to staging and then into production, I want my developer to validate the environment over in the hosted environment just to make sure it's ready, that the applications behave as expected before we go into production deployment. So here I'm looking at that service provider instance of Azure Stack. Now, the first thing this developer might do is go ahead and look at the marketplace running over in the service provider. So here they'll go ahead and pull up the marketplace. They'll go ahead and look at the virtual machines that that service provider has made available. And here you'll see that they've made a collection of images available, some that they've manually uploaded from open source distributions, as well as others that have been syndicated from the Azure marketplace. One thing I noticed that as a developer, there's the very same image we were using in the public cloud that we also use for our production deployment here in Atlanta. Now I can ensure that I'm using the very same image over in EMEA when I deploy in the service provider environment. Let's go ahead and take a look at an image we've already deployed in that environment. So here I have a staging container host up and running in the service provider environment. Now, because it was deployed with the same template, with the same configuration options, here I'll have a set of extensions. And in that extensions, I should see the OMS agent, there it is, ensuring that the VMs that are deployed, those container hosts that are running in dev test, running in my data center in Atlanta, and now running at my service provider in EMEA, and my service provider over here in Asia, are all under management by ops through the OMS management system suite in Azure. So they can manage those VMs holistically across the hybrid cloud platform. So I hope what you're starting to get a sense of, that in addition to consistency, Azure Stack and our hybrid cloud platform is creating all kinds of opportunities for collaboration between devs and ops to deliver more reliable applications to our customers. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Bradley. So I want to move on to our last section here. We can get you off to lunch, and that's management. And management is super important, of course, because now we have all these interesting configurations, and we got to be able to make sense out of all of it. So let's take a look. There's a lot of pressures that are coming through, lots of different roles that have to figure out what they're doing. I got to keep it secure. I got to make sure that it's financially viable. There's a lot of competing pressures across all of these roles. And frankly, we in IT, we're trying to make sure all this stuff continues to run and really remains up and running and secure at the same time. So really, what we've invested in is a hybrid cloud management system. And it starts off with things like System Central, like we talked about earlier, but also this big investment in Operation Management Suite. And as a cloud deliver solution, we can handle all the environments that you're interested in. So I've got my existing on-premises work. I've got Windows. I've got Linux. I've got different types of hypervisors that are out there. But I've also got a polycloud environment, not just Azure, but I may have other environments too, and I have to make sense of that. And really what we've done inside of OMS is we've put machine learning and big data behind this, which means we can pull out awesome new insights in that data and put those at your fingertips. So with the hybrid cloud solution, we have all your servers, all your clouds, all your metrics, all your logs together in one place and in a consistent and easy to use system. Now, if you look at it, a few different things that are new and interesting out of here. First of all, insights and analytics. We've added a couple of things. So first one, application server dependency mapping. And that allows me to go through and actually map out my apps, my servers, those components. And frankly, if I have to troubleshoot, I can now figure out which parts are working and where do I have issues. We've also added network performance monitoring into the system. And that one I find is super interesting. If you've ever had to go back and debug some kind of a gray packet loss someplace, a lossy link, this is the sort of system you need to be able to figure out what's going on. In automation and control, we have Azure Automation. That's an awesome system for gluing things together. But we've added some additional functionality. One that's super interesting is file-based tracking across Linux with notifications. So if you've ever had that case where somebody fixed something on a machine, you can actually see what that was and get the notification. We've also added drift control, so you know what it should look like, you know what it's saying, and if they start to drift apart, I can go figure that out and pull it back together. Another really cool thing I'm excited about is patch management, which goes to GA today. We've got a Linux version that's coming here by the end of the year. And one thing's interesting, if you've ever wondered, how the heck do I get these patches in? How long are they going to take? Are they actually, you know, something other people can rely on? We've actually added crowdsourced patch feedback into the tool. So you can actually see from everyone else, is this the right system? And frankly, yeah, that's a great feature. I love that one, okay? Because now I can see what is everybody else doing, and let's go get the wisdom of the crowd to go help us out. I think that's awesome. From a security and compliance perspective, we have a lot of additional work around handling malicious IPs. And one of the other pieces of feedback you gave us is we love Security Center, we love OMS, but you guys need to figure out how these things fit together. And so we've already done some work to make it really easy to move from one system to the other and make that feel very consistent. But I can also tell you we are on a roadmap by end of year to get those converged in a way so that you don't have to think about those differences. I can just look at the things that I'm most interested in, whether I'm a CISO or a security team expert or an ops expert, get those together. It's one simple model. It's only one meter that comes through, no additional complexity there. Now finally, protection and recovery. That one's super important because obviously data is the critical part of what our enterprises is doing. And so we've added a lot of work around the simplified UX and for the data protection piece, I can really go after, you know, my BCDR sort of solutions that I have to have. And again, all of this, all of your thing is in one place, one alerting system, one set of automation. And really, as you learn that as a skill set, it's going to be super helpful because we're going to add a ton of new functionality. In fact, just in the first half of this year, we shipped over 60 new pieces of functionality. And because it's cloud delivered, just like in the Azure public cloud, this is a service, we can continue to add more and more and more into the system. So I want to do one final demo for you, and I'm going to invite Jeff back up on stage, and he's going to go a lot deeper in OMS, and then we'll wrap up. So, Jeff.
Awesome. Thank you, Jason. So you saw in Scott Guthrie's keynote this morning that we did an OMS demo there, and one of the things I want to point out is we're using bleeding edge integration with Azure at that point. What I want to do today is I'm going to actually focus on OMS using the traditional HTML portal that everybody's used to and is available now. So there we go. Thank you. So first of all, to point out, this is all HTML5. It's beautifully rendered, can run on any device, your PC, your Mac, your Surface, your tablet, you name it. Of course, we also have mobile applications as well available for Windows Phone, iPhone, and Android. So one of the first things I want to do is I want to start drilling in, get right into this. Let's start with alert management. So the first thing I can see right here is I already have a number of alerts. I've got critical alerts, I've got warning alerts, and of course, if I'm using System Center Operations Manager on premises, this integrates to provide me a great hybrid solution and filter up my alerts here as well. Now under critical alerts, I can see I've got a couple of critical performance issues here. I've got a tier one performance and an increased temp DB alert, so let's drill into this further. First of all, I want to point out, look at the impressive capabilities you're getting from log search. With log search, I want to be able to actually hover over this, and it'll show me, wow, it's pretty obvious that this service, which consists of a number of different applications, is clearly having a performance issue, and I can look at clearly the ADM demo server is one having the problem. So what I want to do is I want to drill into it and understand the dependencies that make up this server. So let's go back here to the portal, and let's go to the application dependency monitor. Check this out. With the application dependency monitor, we actually map all of the connections between all of the parts of this distributed application. And whether it's Windows or Linux, we put all of this together visually and graphically so you can easily see, okay, where is the issue that I'm seeing? Well, it's clear I've got a red bang here, so I'm gonna drill into this. And of course, we're gonna again give you another graphical visual map to help you easily debug and diagnose where the issue is. Now, on the right-hand side, I've got a number of alerts and a number of things that are going to help me right away. I have a SQL assessment alert. And a SQL assessment is something that runs periodically to check the health and risk profile of your SQL deployment. So I'm going to go ahead and click into log search, and you can see it drills down into a number of categories. Security and compliance, availability and business continuity, performance and scale, and so much more. Now, in my case, since I know I'm having a performance issue, I want to drill into this and take a look at what's going on here. Wow, take a good look here, folks. So what's happening is we're working, our engineers, our thousands of engineers working with customers all over the world, what we are doing is we are building in this intelligence, putting it right in to OMS. So each one of these prioritized recommendations has solid suggestions behind every one of it, prioritized guidance, context, and additional links to help you learn more. Now, as I look at these specific issues here, basically what I'm seeing here is I really need to scale out this database. It's really saying that's what I need to do. But rather than make this a one-time only event, what I'd really like to create a remediation process so that the next time this occurs, I actually have a way to go ahead and solve that. The best way to do that is to use Azure Automation and to actually use a runbook. And in fact, in my gallery, I already have one called the Increase SQL Temp DB. What's interesting about it is, where did this come from? I certainly could have created one by scratch if I wanted, but in fact, I got this from the gallery. The gallery here has a whole bunch of runbooks created by Microsoft, like this one, and from the community. So we encourage folks, as you build more and more solutions, export them up to the community so people can also take advantage of them. If you want to drill in and understand what's actually happening, guess what? Again, you get a graphical representation to understand how this runbook works, understand all of the process in place, and if I then want to use it in my personal gallery with a simple one-click import, it's now in my gallery. So now I have the runbook, and what I really want to do is I want to associate it with an alert. So if this alert comes up next time, guess what? I can then automatically use this runbook. So I'm gonna go back to my alert management. I'm gonna go back to my issue over here. And you can see here under log search that I've had a number of critical alerts already logged by this. So I'm gonna create a new alert. Now check this out. This to me, I love this page. Because first of all, I haven't done anything yet. But we've already pre-populated a whole bunch of this information because of the machine learning and data analytics behind this in log search. If you see here, we've already pre-populated the name, the description, the severity, the search query, so I can easily find this again. We've already set up an alert frequency to look for this every 15 minutes. And if we see it, guess what? We'll shoot off an email notification. Now, I'm actually going to perform three actions to integrate with my service desk. Watch this, folks. Count the clicks. Number one, I'm going to enable my service desk actions. Now I'm going to select my connection. I could use Provant, ServiceNow, ShareWell. And guess what? I'm going to create a work item. Three clicks, service desk integration, just like that. Now, of course, I want to configure it to go with my runbook. So I'm going to click on runbook, and I'm going to go ahead and select my SQL temp database. Just like that, click save. And what's happening now? It's actually remediating this issue. So it's automatically scaling out the databases for me. The next time this happens and the alert is raised, it'll create an incident, someone can look at it, we can remediate it. And of course, I could fully automate this if I wanted to, but most companies don't want to have someone actually verify the process until they're comfortable with that workflow. Next, I want to get to a topic that I think is important to everyone, which is security, of course. We know that, quite honestly, the cyber attacks are only escalating, they're only coming faster, and they tend to come from places far from and parts unknown. Whether it's across an ocean in a different continent, we want to make sure we give you the best tools, the best intelligence to help you identify, detect, and remediate issues that you may be having in your organization, whether you're a small company, a medium, or a worldwide organization. And I want to start with one of my favorites here, threat intelligence. So with threat intelligence, for example, we can see here that we are looking at our global map here, and we can see we actually have a couple of cases of outgoing malicious traffic. This is very concerning to me because it means someone's actually using some of my infrastructure to actually deliver malware traffic. So I'm going to click on this one here in Asia, and I'm going to drill in here further. Now look at here on the right-hand side. This is filled up. We know this is a malicious IP address. We know it's a botnet. Well, where's this coming from? This is coming from the intelligence that we've been gathering at the Microsoft Digital Crimes Unit, at the Microsoft DCU. So now we've known, hey, you know what? We've seen things coming from this IP address. We've got a botnet. And if I want further information about this botnet, I don't need to leave. I don't need to go searching. It's actually right here at my fingertips. And I can read more about this botnet attack and understand what it's trying to do and what it's trying to accomplish. Now I'm going to go back over here to security audit. And I also want to point out notable issues. So I think of notable issues as those things you want folks in IT to be prepared and get ready to take care of with urgency. For example, computers missing security updates, that's definitely something I want to take care of quickly. I also created a custom action here to protect the CEO against suspicious logins. Certainly the CEO could, you know, have forgotten their password and they're trying to get in there, but you know what? Something looks a little amiss here. So again, using the beauty of log search, machine learning, and data analytics, we can look in here further and say, okay, look, we've had three attempted logins to the CEO account, except it's happening from three different machines, and if we look at the time generated, it's actually almost the same time. And in fact, these are from internal systems. So what this tells me is I probably have some sort of malware internally that's trying to brute force attack my CEO login. This is bad news. I immediately want to disable the CEO account, and I want to go right to these machines because I actually have all the information and go to them and start getting rid of that malware. So again, doing a ton of work here to make sure we're providing you all the intelligence so you can help protect your company and your organization. Finally, we want to get to, of course, update assessment. We want to make sure, of course, that you can easily patch and understand the security posture of all your systems, both Windows and Linux from a single console. You can see here I've got critical, I've got security updates, I've got so much more. I've got some critical updates here for Windows, so I'm going to drill into here. And I can get a classification updates. I can actually get the age of updates. I see I've got one here that's 150 days. That's actually quite alarming. How did that happen? I probably wasn't using OMS at the time. Glad thing I am now. And of course, look at the average installation time. To me, this is actually really interesting because what we're doing is we're crowdsourcing this data. We know that, okay, you know what, there are two updates that you need to apply. Well, now we can actually estimate how long it's going to take you for you to apply those so you can put that in your schedule and make sure that you're meeting your SLAs. If you look at this and go, oh, it's only 4 minutes to apply these patches, great, I've got a perfect window to do that and I can make that happen. So again, all of this part of log search. Finally, of course, you may want to actually actively go patch and update your deployments. So here, we're going to create a new update run. And in fact, I could choose specific computers, or I could actually look in AD in specific groups. In this case, I'm going to go patch my SQL servers. All right? And in fact, I want to do this weekly. And in fact, I'm going to do this Sunday morning. Great. Shouldn't bother anybody. No one should be around. Click on save. And just like that, I have now patching this set of servers. So think about what you've seen here from an OMS standpoint. You've seen alert management. We've actually seen runbooks in the gallery that are available to you. We've actually taken those runbooks, provided a process and a workflow through Azure Automation. We talked about threat analytics, the work that we're doing here with the Microsoft DCU to provide this information for you to help protect your organization. And of course, patch management, all of this, what you're seeing here is through OMS. So with OMS, we're taking the power of the Azure cloud and helping you protect and monitor your infrastructure wherever it may be. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff. So many of us are really getting started on our cloud journey. Some of you are very, very far along. Some of you are just figuring out how to get going, and we want to help. So in particular, we've assembled a free set of IT Pro resources. In particular, we have a career planner on the Career Planning Center that'll help you figure out how you can plot your next moves. You can get started with Azure with some of the new documentation and examples. We also have demos and how-to videos that can get you up and running. We also want you to be able to connect with your peers and experts out there, figure out what worked for them, and what would you recommend others doing if they were going to follow and do what you've done as well. And so I'll again want to welcome to Ignite. We've got a lot of great speakers. We've got a lot of great sessions. Lunch is ready. Thank you very much.